When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Want to increase your salary? Discover your earning potential with CareerBuilder. CareerBuilder.com knows you have superpowers that make you good to your job. They're called skills. And CareerBuilder.com has tools specially designed to help you move up, like CareerBuilder CoLab. Check out resume examples. Learn what recruiters are looking for. Search salaries. And view different career paths based on your skills. You'll be amazed to know how many ways you can use the skills you already have to build your future. Visit CareerBuilder.com.
Welcome into the lounge presented by DraftKings. We have the pleasure of talking to Rod Woodson, former Ravens safety, and we're going to talk about the 30 for 30 ESPN documentary, The Bullies of Baltimore, in which Rod was a main character in that. So thanks for joining us, Rod. First question for you is you know, what was it like being part of this? It was really taped during a championship celebration when, you know, it was a reunion of that Super Bowl 35 team. Just what was that whole process and that night like for you?
I mean, it's always good to get back with your buddies, especially, you know, a team that wins the Super Bowl. You build those friendships, and you always enjoy when we come back together and kind of talk about not just that year, but the years after, years before. Anytime we can get together and talk to the guys, it's always a good time.
Nice.
Now, that team was full of huge personalities, and that comes across in the documentary. And it's just fun to kind of see some of these old clips and how brash that team was. Now, you kind of seem like you're a little bit more like of a chill approach. You know, like some of these guys were brash in your face, and you don't seem like that you're that type of dude. So how did you fit in with all of that going on, or was there more to that when you were a player? Tell me about that.
No, I mean, I'm more laid back. I'm not a real talker. I'm not going to give you a lot of headlines and highlights in the sense of, one-liners. I just go out and play. I'm a blue collar. I put it this way. I'm a blue collar football player, just played in the Midwest, that moved over to Baltimore for a little bit. But, you know, the way I fit in with the group though, as a whole, which really started before the Super Bowl. So it started my first year there in 98. When I come in, I meet Ray Lewis, who's a young pup. And talking to him and telling him, you know, it's got to be more than, you know, just making tackles. You know, we got to be bigger and better than that. And, you know, how do we do that as a group? We got to do that. And, you know, Ray was, you know, all the players, Ray was their contemporary, right? So they would listen to Ray, where they looked at me and they saw Grandpa Paul. Right? And they're like, okay, this is, you know, I remember first coming to the locker room in 98, and they're like, hey, man, I played with you on Tecmo Bowl. I'm like, okay, I know I'm old. So, you know, and then I had one of the players even called me Mr. Woodson. I'm like, hey, that's my daddy. Stop it. You know, so, but, you know, I blended in the sense that to bring some stability, some calmness to the group. But it's always fun to listen to the guys who did have that life in them, you know, where Goose and Shannon and Ray, all those guys that had that type of life in them, you know, those make the locker room. Those make the fun times in the locker room. You know, it makes it worth it, because being in a locker room with 53 men for 5 months, there's no other place on earth like it.
Mm-hmm.
That
especially
build
in that
all
locker room.
This chemistry. Well, especially in that locker room, and each locker room has its own special qualities, right?
Yeah.
And it was fun to see it, you know, grow throughout the years. And then that year was just a special year, because everything came together for the defense. You know, offense had their struggles, but we never splintered as a football team. And that's what made it really, really special.
It's funny, Rod, I had in my notes here that it seemed like you were the dad of the defense, and you're saying you were called the granddad of the defense.
You just skipped a step.
I went over. But that's what they call the old guys, right? And the old guys in the locker room were grandpa paws, right? So, and I was that. You know, I remember Marvin calling me and saying, hey, man, we got a really young, talented football team. We just need somebody to teach them what it looks like to win.
Right.
And at that point, I never won a Super Bowl, but I was, you know, I was doing everything that I could to be the best player I could be every single year. And then coming over there, you know, seeing where the growth need to happen and talking to Ray about it and telling Ray, hey, man, you're going to be the one who kind of implements this whole thing in phases. And phase one, we had to try to get them to buy in to having Friday meetings where, you know, just with the team or just with the players, no coaches, giving us a script, letting us go through a whole game, letting us talk about how we're going to see the game being played out. Because the coaches are conductors. The players are the actors, right? They're going to make it come alive. So seeing that come to life in 98 and then in 99, and then everything kind of clicked in 2000. Where everybody bought in, everybody did what was asked of them. We still had fun because it is a game, so you should have fun in a game. But how it all came together and to see how the personalities kept coming out
right.
each phase of it, and it never, you know, which made it even funner because, you know, Goose was always Goose, right? Shannon was always Shannon. It doesn't matter who they were talking to. Ray was always going to be Ray. So having those guys there and seeing them kind of go at it at times, with especially Shannon and Goose. But Ray, you know, Ray having his little quirky little things that he liked to do. It was fun to watch, and it was really a year that I'll never forget.
Right. Now, in the documentary, they played a little match game with Brian Billick, and they said the cue for you all was that Brian Billick, he sure is a blank. Shannon's answer to that was know-it-all. Goose said, pain in the ass. And we have to be able to curse a little bit on this or you're not able to tell the story of the documentary.
We're quoting Tony said.
We're quoting him. Now, your answer was winner for Brian Billick. So that led me to the question of, Rod, were you the butt kisser of the 2000 Ravens?
No, I wasn't the butt kisser. I would give Brian a hard time. I had to bring, again, on the stage, I had to bring balance.
Right. Yeah, right? So true.
You got to have balance. You have to have balance inside of a team. So somebody has to do it. Everybody can't be crazy. If everybody's crazy, we're going off on the deep end. Right.
That's so true.
But what I loved about, first of all, what I loved about Brian is that Brian treated us like men. Mm-hmm. We didn't have bet check. And I'm, when he first came in, he said he wasn't going to bet check. I'm like, what? I'm out. but we didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, we really, inside the locker room, we policed it. And we told the guys why he's treating us like men. Mm. We are. I mean, you know, at that point, I was 34.
Right.
You know, years old, something like that. So I'm like, hey, I respect that. And when Brian gave us that responsibility, we all made sure that all the young players respected it, mm-hmm. right? In that time frame. And then with that, though, it was great to see, like, Brian would walk out and he wore these Daisy Dukes shorts every single day. And Tony would just crush him. Get out of here with those ugly legs. You got those Daisy Dukes on. I mean, just everything. And it's normally... But normally, you never talk to the head coach like that, right? Ever.
Right.
And no other team I've ever heard that before. And then when Brian kind of gave it back to him, I'm like, oh, okay, this is going to be a fun year.
That's cool.
So one thing that was mentioned in the doc was Ray Lewis watching Gladiator, okay? He would watch it before every game. So, did you ever watch Gladiator? And I don't know how much Ray is making this up or if this is actually, you know, true, but would you ever watch Gladiator with Ray?
I've never watched Gladiator with Ray, but I watched Gladiator.
Okay.
Did Ray watch it every game? I'm not sure. You know, it's like a fish. You know how a fish, you know, as you get older, you know how your fish gets bigger and bigger.
Of course.
Exactly.
I'm just saying. I'm not saying he didn't. I'm just saying. So
next time he tells a story, he'll have the Gladiator mask on.
But you know, he did. You know, he put his hand on the grass. And you know how he rolled it. You know how Gladiator he rolled it. And he said, and he smelled. And he said, "Oh my command, unleash hell." And And he did that one time. He said it one time. I was like, are we serious, man? You're quoting Gladiator? Like, really? Like, I couldn't even take it serious because I knew where it was from. Like, I can't even listen to you now. Like, you know, but with that being said, that he made it fun because he always had something to say. Uh-huh. You know, Ray thought he was a poet. I think he also thought he was a poet. He's like, you know, he would have some weird messages on his if you called his phone, he would have a message for you to leave a message.
Uh-huh. Right.
And those messages were crazy. I think like the first time I called his phone, it was like, you walk down the steps and you turn left and you're walking into the wind. Are you walking in the right direction?
You're like, and I just want to leave a message.
What? F are you talking about? Like, what? But that was our team. And that's what made the team so special, because everybody was willing to be themselves inside the locker room, but then we all accepted each other for who we were.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So you talked about in the documentary that after the week one shutout in Pittsburgh, that really kind of showed you like, oh, wow, like we might be better than we even thought we were. And you know, the 99 season, which was really when I was a kid and I started following the team, was that 99 season. It was like the first season that the Ravens were kind of good, you know, and you were right. Like, they're building something here. And then, you know, you obviously, you know, added pieces. Shannon Sharp came in, Sam Adams came in that 2000 year. So really the talent level was nice. Right. And you said that shutout in week one proves something to you. Can you just talk about what you saw and what that did for the team?
Yeah, I mean, each year we added pieces, right?
Right.
Guys were let go. We added new pieces in. And then that year that we brought in Sam and Shannon, you know, and having that shutout, you can kind of see it, because we've seen each year more players bought into having the Friday meetings and doing basically policing ourselves in the locker room, mm-hmm. right? After the first year, the second year was even better. And then the third year, you can really kind of see it during training camp and even off season. You can see the guys all buying into it. And then this kind of fruit of our labor, that first game, we had the shutout. We're like, oh, okay, hey, we keep this up, this is going to be fun. And mm-hmm. on the same token with that, but Marvin Lewis was getting better and better of calling games and making game plans. Mm. And players really trusted his game plans. And if we question the defense inside of that, Marvin would throw the defense out.
Mm.
So he started believing in us.
Interesting.
And I think it all came together because, you know, having a shutout the first game out, we knew we were going to be good. And I don't think any of us thought we were going to be that good,
right.
to be honest. You know, but the way when we started playing and how fast we played, and we practiced that way too, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we made a pact that year in training camp that everybody's going to run to the ball and touch the ball. Even big chunky Sam, even big chunky Goose, run your butt to the ball and touch the ball. Mm-hmm. And that was our training.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, if we do that every single practice, every single day, nobody's going to be ready for that speed. And nobody's going to be ready for us to play that hard for four quarters.
Right.
And it happened. It happened all during OTAs. It happened all during training camp. And we played that same way all season long.
I think another game that kind of showed like the dominance of the defense was the week four game against the Bengals, where Corey Dillon literally tapped out of the game and said, I'm out. You gave up 94 yards of total offense, and he had 4 yards of rushing. And he's like, I'm out of this game. And the documentary captures that really well. What is it like when you see a team and a player like that just give up and say, I'm not going out there against those guys any longer?
Yeah, I tell you what, we only had two Hall of Famers come off that team, right? But man, we had so many good players. I mean, we just think about having Goose and Sam Adams. And we talk about Goose because he has such a big personality. Sam Adams, man, that dude, we call him Sybil because we don't know what, you know, if he's going to be a good mood or bad mood today, but he played ball, though.
Right.
He came out, he played ball. And I've never seen two guys inside that were so big, that were so agile, and you couldn't move them.
Mm-hmm.
They're like a brick wall. I mean, so we knew as a secondary, ain't nobody running against us.
Right.
We got those guys with our backers. Ain't nobody running against us. So we don't need to be running up there trying to fit in the run. Let's stay back on the back end. Let's make our plays when we are called upon. Just how it all came together with Peter Boulware and Rob Burnett and Mike McCrary, all those guys all made plays throughout all these games. But then playing against a guy like Dylan and he doesn't 4 yards, taps out, that's what you want, right? You want to see the really good players on the other team say, ah, nah, don't play messing with those dudes anymore. And that's when you know you're playing really good football.
Over the course of the season, did you see offenses and offensive players just, could you sense that they were scared of you over the course of the season?
I can't say scared, but I know they respected us. And some didn't. And we used to say all the time, nobody's ready for our speed. Mm-hmm. Nobody was ready for us to run from the first snap to the last snap like we ran to the ball. Nobody's ready for that. Mm. But we prepared ourselves that whole offseason, really the year before and the year before that, but the whole offseason to get to that point. And everybody bought in. Everybody was in shape. I mean, you just seen guys flying to the ball at all times. I mean, it was multiple hats at the ball at all times. And, you know, when you play like that with the talent that we had, with the development of our defensive coordinator, Marvin Lewis, which I thought he should have got assistant coach of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seriously, how did he not? That,
that's crazy. I don't know how you don't. Your defense breaks all the records.
Right. That's crazy.
And you don't get assistant coach of the year? Like, seriously. That makes no sense to me. But that's another story.
Yeah. I want to back up a little bit, and you kind of referenced this, and they talked about it in the documentary, was that you and your mentorship of Ray and saying to Ray, like, we have something special here. You are special. And we need to take it to that next level, right? That it's okay to know that you can take it to the next level and be the best ever and kind of unlock that that next tier was an important moment for this team. Can you talk about kind of how you helped shape Ray in that way and how that rubbed off on the rest of defense?
Yeah, I mean, it started from day one when I got there, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember they were like, everybody said, hey, yeah, Ray Lewis led the team in tackles. And I remember, and it's a clip in our Hard Knocks where me and Ray are in the back. We always sat in the back and we stretched together. Mm-hmm. And Ray's like, yeah, I led the team in tackles. I was like, so? Like, who cares? Like, there's 31 other guys that lead their team in tackles.
Right.
Like what is that? And you know, my point to him was that to do more, don't think that shouldn't be your standard. Your standard should be higher than that because you're such a better player than that. Now we just got to start making big plays and big moments and big games. Mm-hmm. And then that's where the Ray Lewis will show up. The real Ray Lewis will show up. Mm-hmm. And it was happening. And I remember when we played Tennessee, and he hit Eddie on, like, I think they ran like a outside zone, and Ray just smacked him right in the head. And I was like, okay, this dude is showing up in these Mick moments. And I remember he hit Eddie, and all he said was, it's me, it's me. And he didn't even say his name. He walked back to the and I just fell out laughing, like, oh my gosh, this is crazy.
But, is that the one where Eddie George folded like a baby, apparently?
he was in the fetal position a little bit for a little while down the road. I will say that. But to see Ray grow over the years was like really tremendous. And I used to tell Ray, they're not going to listen to me in practice. Mm. So when practice is going south, is going bad, you need to be the one to pull everybody together. Mm. It can't be the coaches all the time. You're going to be the one to pull them together. And he started the first year, it was spotty. The second year, it was better. Third year, dead on. Mm. I didn't have to say anything to him. He did everything his way. He got the guys going in practice. He challenged the guys, but he loved on the guys. He was a great leader. And I arguably say, and I say this all the time, he's probably one of the best leaders I've ever seen in my time frame of watching football, as a player who played at a high level, but then challenges guys, but also loved on his guys, and they all want to follow him. Mm. Mm.
So a fun back and forth on the stage that night was you and Shannon talking, because Shannon was saying that he had his first career catch in the NFL against you. We went back and we did the research here to look this up. On October 14th, 1990, Broncos Steelers played each other, and Shannon had caught his first NFL pass for 12 yards. Was that so? What is your verdict here?
We don't have the play-by-play. We can't tell if it was against you.
This is what I told Shannon. I don't remember you. It meant nothing. It was a 10-yard catch. Okay, great. I'm like, I don't even know who you were.
Yeah, this
that's
rookie.
What I told him. I said, you knew who I was, but I had no idea who you were. So that's what I'm telling you.
I love it.
It was his only catch of the day, and I think he had 7 catches that year. So just to give you a little more ammunition if you want it, you know.
I like funny. That. I'm going to use that one on him.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, it was interesting because when we just you mentioned that you didn't feel like the locker room was divided that year, and it could have been. I mean, the defense or the offense didn't score a touchdown for 5 straight games, and Shannon actually, you know, one of his press conferences basically said, like, they got to pick it up. Like, you know, they took ownership of that. And, like, how did you keep the locker room from being divided? Because, like, that would have been a very easy thing to do, and it feels like it would have been.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Well, you know, the one thing that we said on defense is that's not our job. We don't play offense. Our job is to play defense. And if they don't score, they don't win. It's going to finish a tie. Minimum, it's a tie. but our secret recipe was every Friday, me, Shannon, and Ray would get into the steam room. And we'll say, okay, Shannon, what do you got this week? And he'll go, I think we got 10 points. It's impossible. And it would be about that, too. It would be about what he said. It would be 10 points, 13 points somewhere in that area. And we're like, bruh, if you give us 13 points, we win. Uh-huh. Just give us 13 points. We're good.
That's fun.
And he was about right almost every single time we did it.
That is so funny. So a lot of talk also was, you know, the goose hit on Rich Gannon and Phil Simms blowing up about how illegal it was and all that in the AFC Championship. Do you think, you know,
it wasn't illegal? They didn't throw a flag.
Exactly. Now by today's rules, like, the game has softened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the whole body weight you can't land on the quarterback rule, basically. Do you think the 2000 Ravens could have been the 2000 Ravens with today's rules?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I think we had such chemistry.
Right.
But we have commitment to each other. As men, we made a challenge to ourselves in training camp that we're going to run, really in OTAs. That we're going to run to the ball every single play, every single snap, every single day. Is it going to be hard? Yeah. Is it going to be some hot days? Yeah. But we said that to each other. And we uphold that to each other, and we challenged each other every single time. We saw one guy maybe slacking up, and we did it all year long.
Right.
I mean, all year long. Do I think the same rules? You still can hit hard. Just hit right.
Right.
Get in the right spots. Now, you know, Goose couldn't do what he did to Ritz, you know, but he still can sack him.
Right.
Right? He still can sack him. We still would have won the game.
Well, I wonder, too.
We still had a better football team.
Right. I wonder, you know, a lot of the documentary obviously was about a mentality, right? It's that being the bully, right? And, like, I feel like that mentality certainly would not have been any different with the characters on that team and the talent.
Yeah.
And, like, so from a mental standpoint and just the way that you play the game would have been all the same.
It wouldn't have changed. Right. Nothing would have changed. And, you know, I can't say we were bullies in the way we played, mm-hmm. but we weren't bullies in the way we talked. Like, we didn't talk about a bunch, right? You know, and Ray might've had some great quotes at times, and some of the other guys might've had some quotes,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't give a lot of one-liners and ammunition for the opposing team.
Really?
And we respected them. We respected them, but at the end, we knew they weren't better than us.
Right. Well, the biggest...
And we were like, nobody's better than we are.
Yeah.
The biggest talker was Shannon, I think, in terms of trash talk, right?
Well, that's his... That's
his side of the ball.
Side.
Yeah.
Right. That's and Brian may have been number two.
Well, yeah. Brian, we had to have his back because he said some things you'd be like, oh my gosh, now we're really going to be fighting on the field, you know, but you're taking up for your coach.
Right.
So he's our guy. He believed in us. What I really liked though, it was one time, I don't know what it was. We were playing music in the locker room and Shannon hated music in the locker room, hated it. And he went to get Brian like a baby. He went to go get, you know, daddy. He went to get his dad. And then he brought his dad and said, they're playing music in here and I need to, he basically wanted to quiet. And he was like, who, the defense? And we were like, yeah, the defense. We like our music. And he was like, well, if it's a defense, we're going to let them play the music. And he walked back out.
That must have been during the five-week stretch.
That's when I knew we were turning him to the dark side.
That's hilarious.
We were making Brian go from offense to defense.
That's great.
That's so funny.
It's funny to hear you say that you know, because the documentary does, it certainly makes it look like you guys were a bunch of trash talkers. Like, and maybe it's more Shannon, and Goose did have the one-liners, like, and Shannon standing on stage after the AFC Championship saying, deal with it, America, and there's a clip of him. Whatever they say, we said it, and, like, all that stuff. And it seemed like you guys almost, like, relished being, like, okay, like, having that brash attitude. Like, it seemed like you were fine with that.
Yeah.
Branding.
Yes.
Well, we weren't scared of anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have beat any team in the league. We would have beat them.
Yeah.
I mean, is that brash? Is that confidence? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. That was our belief system. We just thought that if you put any other team on the field with us, they're going to lose.
Uh-huh. Right.
We don't care who it is. And we just had that belief, and it's a fine, like, that's that confidence and cockiness. There's a real fine line.
Yeah.
Right.
With the two. Right. And we walked that line. We really did. We walked the line with the confidence and the cockiness all in the same swag. But I don't think we ever overstepped it. But now Shannon's talks too much. He has, that's why he still has a podcast. He gets paid talking because he just talks a lot.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we kept it 100, as kids will say nowadays. But as we walked on the field, we just knew we were the better football team on the field. And if we played our best game, especially defensively, you're not going to beat us and you're not going to score.
Yeah, I think a great example of that was in the documentary talking about the mentality going into the Super Bowl against the Giants, right? And I think your quote was, we just knew that we were going to win this football game. We were just trying to figure out what our ring sizes were, which is great because we have a saying on the podcast here on the Lounge. Every time the Ravens win on Monday when we're talking about the game, it's a size them up Monday. You're just sizing them up every time you get a win.
And this is the God's honest truth.
Yeah.
So, you know, Minnesota was really good that year.
Right.
So I remember watching the clock and we seeing that the New York beat Minnesota. We're like, what? How in the world? They beat Minnesota. So we're like, okay. Once they won, we won. We looked at the tape. One, I think it was like a quarter, maybe it was a half. We're watching the tape. And I remember looking, me and Ray looked at each other and said, man, if they get past the 50, we quit. And they got past the 50 once. They got past
that
the 50
is so
one time.
Funny.
It's like we just knew they weren't better than us. We knew they're gonna try to run the ball against us. That wasn't happening.
Right.
They're gonna try to throw in the seams. That wasn't happening. So we just knew their game plan and what they did all year long. Fit what we do perfectly. So we just knew we were going to win.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it like Kerry Collins? What was it that you saw that just you were like, nah, this ain't gonna do it.
We knew they're gonna try to run Tiki.
Right. Like, exactly. He's not like a physical back. Exactly.
No. You're not gonna run against first. they're not going to run. So now you're going to put Kerry in pass situation.
Right.
So now we're going to blitz you and get our rushers on the edge on against you. And you like throwing in the seams. That's who Sean Payton was. Sean Payton was the coordinator. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Sean Payton is like, he likes to pump over here, throw over here. He's been doing that forever. And that's what Kerry was doing. We're like, okay, well, we'll just take the second pump. You pump over there, we're going to go the other way. Right. That's what we did. I mean, that's how we got so many balls knocked out.
Right, and interceptions.
Yeah. Well, that game, I mean, your game was dominant from start to finish. Was it just playing in that Super Bowl, like, I mean, Super Bowls generally aren't blowouts. So when you have a blowout like that, is it just, there's no pressure at that point in the second half? Like, how much fun was the second half of that game when you guys are just dominating the way that you were?
Yeah, you know, it was pretty crazy because, you know, they go down, they get the kick return. But then when Lou returns the kick again, we're like, oh, frickin', this is over. It's over. So we're like, you don't really want to talk about it too early. So we really didn't talk about winning the game until probably the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Okay.
So we had 15 minutes on the sideline. Well, we got to talk about it. But it was fun. And I remember seeing Mr. Modell when he came to the sideline. We're like, what's the ring going to look like? What's it going to look like? Put some extra diamonds in it.
That's hilarious. Does it still bother you to this day, that 7 on the final score, because it wasn't an offensive touchdown?
I hate it. I was like, we technically had the only shutout, right, but since they did score, it goes against us.
Right. I
absolutely hate it. We should have had a shutout.
Yeah. Yeah. So Rod, right now, you are in training camp. This is a pivot here. You know, you're in training camp. You're wearing your Vegas football shirt. You're coaching the XFL's Vegas Vipers here. So how is that going? How's training camp going? The season starts February 18th. How are you enjoying it? And what are you looking forward to about this XFL season?
It's going well. I mean, the last 3 days, it's been an ice storm down here in Dallas.
Right.
So all the roads have been icy, and, you know, they don't put salt down here. They put sand on the ground. I don't think it works. They should talk to the cities up north to just say, hey, how do you remove ice from the roads? Really great question. But other than sitting in the hotel and doing Zoom the last 3 days with the players, it's been going fun. I mean, it's, you know, to build a team in a 5-week period is pretty tough task to do, but it's been fun. It's been fun. We got a really good group of guys. Our core guys, who we know is going to be on the team, they've been great leaders. You know, and what we told them from day one is that we're going to try to build men along with better football players. And if we can do that, then we're going to have a real mature football team that's going to show up on game day. That, you know, because what I always tell the guys is, I've never seen an immature player be a mature football player. Mm-hmm. I've never seen one. You've never seen one. There's no such thing as an immature individual to be a mature player in any sport. So if you can show me maturity outside of it, then I know inside of it, you're going to be mature.
Yeah. Rod, thank you, buddy. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one. Good to catch up.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, great stuff from Rod. Also, we want listeners to know that the sports landscape's ever-changing. This week is no different. DraftKings is the leader in daily fantasy sports, and it still has daily fantasy contests running for everyone who's still looking to have some skin in the game. Every player has a salary associated with drafting them. You assemble a lineup of players, and then you sit back, and you try to watch your points pile up while staying under that salary cap. Salary cap's important these days. A lot of salary cap talk.
We're going to need more of it.
Yeah. So now that you know how to play, sign up on the DraftKings app today, download it, and sign up using the code FLOCK. New users get a free entry with their first deposit. Again, the code is FLOCK.
Yeah. So just what were your takeaways from the Bullies of Baltimore documentary?
Loved it. Really entertaining. I laughed out loud multiple times. You heard me.
You heard
me at my desk this week laughing out loud. Like,
you
must
exactly
be watching
what you were watching.
Yeah. There was so many great moments, great footage, and like I think we both felt that Tony Siragusa was the star of the show.
For sure. Yeah, I thought it was really cool because obviously with Goose, you know, passing away last year, this was really a great tribute to him. You know, it just really captured what he was all about, you know, just the big heart, obviously the comedian just being hilarious, the football player aside, you know, just it was really cool. You know, I would say the character, the player, the teammate, the father.
Yeah.
We saw all that of Goose, and to be left with this kind of treasure after he's gone really does feel special.
Yeah, it's obviously, you know, Goose passing away was so tragic, but the silver lining in some way is that they had this moment. You know, they had this event, and that he passed away not long after it. And so they had this opportunity where they were able to come together and have this reunion, have this night, and get these stories. Mm-hmm. And it was just really powerful. I thought the filmmakers did an awesome job. The other thing that stood out is just the brashness. I mean, we asked Rod about it. You know, he kind of downplayed it.
I was surprised by that answer.
Yeah, he kind of downplayed it.
Like, we didn't talk too much trash. I was like, what?
I was like, I thought that you did.
Right.
And he's like, well, Shannon. But I thought that the brashness of that team was unique. And, of course, like, you're pulling clips, and you can be selective about that. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, it sure seemed like they captured the feeling and the emotion and the attitude of that team.
Well, I never really got the sense that Ray Lewis was a big trash talking kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Saragusa was hilarious, and you know, nobody was as smooth with the F bomb as Goose. You know, nobody in history. But I didn't ever, you know, like I mentioned, I was 15, 16 years old. I was 15. During the 2000 Ravens team. And so I was a big Ravens fan. And, like, I remember that year. And I don't ever remember thinking that Goose was really a trash talker of the other side either.
Mm-hmm.
The defense clearly had tons of swagger. But the trash talking was from Shannon. And, yeah.
I don't know, like, the quote from Chris McAllister.
That was certainly inflammatory.
Yeah.
That was certainly inflammatory.
And you know, now the clip from Billick was in his locker room. You know, right, where he says, right, they're the best team, but
he didn't think
not
that
today.
Was get out.
You know, then that gets out. Right. You know, so, like, I don't really put that on him. But
right,
like you said,
the brashness, I think there's a difference between brashness and talking smack necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess he, you know, he talked about what Ray said to Eddie George when he popped him pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, it's me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that, like, they definitely made the opponent aware that they were good.
Yeah.
You know, so the funny thing is, like, when you're watching it, I found myself being like, is the way that the 2000 Ravens were perceived, is that the way that the Bengals are currently perceived?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that you could look at, like, a lot of teams over time and be like, or a lot of players in different sports or in the NFL and say, like, is he that guy? And I don't know. I don't know. I guess my answer is no, I don't think so.
A lot of teams that play the Bengals, you know, the Bills were chirping about the Bengals and their cockiness. Pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
The Chiefs, it was a big running theme all week. I think there are some similarities there. And when you're a fan of that team, you know, as I was with the 2000 Ravens, like, it's fun.
Yeah.
You're like, I love this. Yeah, be cocky as all get out. I eat it up. When you're on the other side, you hate it. Right. So that was kind of what they conveyed in this documentary, was that the 2000 Ravens, and they seemed to embrace it with Shannon Sharp, particularly some of his quotes, they embraced being the team that people didn't like.
Well, they did. The difference, it seems like, you know, going into the AFC Championship, like the Burrowhead quotes and stuff like that, mm-hmm, like, that doesn't seem like
that wasn't as much the Ravens.
It doesn't seem that way.
Yeah.
Now, you just basically, it's fresh, so you really don't like the Bengals, and you're basically like, America didn't like the Ravens in 2000.
I really, I honestly go back and forth, and in part maybe because of how I grew up and rooting for the 2000 Ravens. Like, I honestly kind of go back and forth on the Bengals. On one hand, it really does bother me, and I'm like, geez, mm-hmm, Louise. On the other hand, I'm like, this makes the game more fun.
Yeah.
Like, this is what football, it's entertainment. It makes it more fun. Like, it adds to the, like, the Ravens Steelers of the old days when, like, they really seemed to despise each other was fun. Like, they wanted to just kick their heads in, you know? And, like, so I honestly kind of, I don't like it, and I like it at the same time.
It is more fun. I mean, you get like quotes from Travis Kelce on the stage after the AFC Championship. You know, right. Shut your mouth and know your role, you jabroni.
Right.
It's funny. The mayor of Cincinnati, like, you know, it's fun. So if you haven't watched it yet, the 30 for 30 is out. It aired on ESPN last night. It's just a great, great documentary. So much fun to look back at that, that team and that season. Real quick, the last kind of thought here. Offensive coordinator search ongoing for the Ravens. Mm-hmm. Dave Canales from the Seahawks reportedly had a second interview. We'll see where that goes.
Seems like every other day there's like another candidate. You know, it doesn't seem like I don't know whether the first phase of like the initial, you know, wide net of first interviews is done.
Right, right.
And we're on to the second because. Yeah, I don't know. So, it just keeps growing, seemingly.
Yeah, so no real update on that front other than that it's ongoing.
Right.
And we'll see if it happens before the Super Bowl is over or if it happens soon after that. It wouldn't surprise me really either way. So there's going to be more to come here. It's a busy time of year.
Senior Bowl?
Yeah, Senior Bowl. You know, all of the decision makers down there talking to some of these prospects. Combine's right around the corner. Free agency as well. So
right.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you leave a rating and a review for the podcast. And coming up soon, maybe next episode, we give away the helmet.
Ooh, sure.
We give away the helmet.
It's time. We got some emails.
We got a ton of emails over the course of the year that we'll read. If you send an email, you're entered to win the helmet.
Over the entire course of the
over
year.
Over the entire course of the year. So we got a big list. Big list, all right? You can email
That's
us at lounge@ravens.nfl.net. Thanks for listening. Talk with you again soon.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.